flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? It is Tuesday, January 14th here on Sports Talk, gearing up for some Pelicans basketball this evening, a 6:30 pregame coverage, 7 o'clock tip-off coming up on WWL 870 AM in Chicago. And then at 8 o'clock tonight, we'll go to the LSU men's basketball team in action today and desperately in need of a win in SEC play. They are 0-3. They're taking on Arkansas, who are 0-3. Also looking for their first win in SEC play. The Hogs have been 0-3 as well. It's been a tough go for Matt McMahon and crew, and just looking for them to get on track. The LSU ladies got another victory last night, so they remain undefeated on the year. But the LSU men's basketball team, mentioning they're still looking for that first SEC victory. And Charlie, I know you told me coming in today that have I looked at the upcoming slate of games for this Bayou Bengals men's squad, and it is pretty brutal.
So the SEC in general is elite this year in college basketball, and when you're playing conference games, you're going to run into some really tough teams. Now, this matchup against Arkansas tonight is huge for LSU because if they don't pick up a win here, things could potentially spiral and spiral quickly, and I'll explain. Their schedule after Arkansas at home in the PMAC tonight. This weekend, they play number 11 Texas A&M on the road, and then they play number 4 Alabama on the road. They come home and host number 1 Auburn. They host Texas. They go on the road to face number 23 Georgia, and then they host number 21 Ole Miss. That is their next 6 games. 5 of those come against top 23 opponents.
Yeah.
And especially the next 3. I mean, you go on the road to A&M at Alabama, and then you host the number 1 team in the country in Auburn. Like, you need to pick up a win because things could potentially spiral and spiral out of control quickly.
When you look at this LSU team, I know there weren't a ton of expectations going into this season, and they started out their non-conference slate pretty well, but SEC caliber competition has just been too much for the Bayou Bengals.
Exactly. I mean, that's what you're looking at. The SEC is nasty in basketball. And, you know, maybe it's taking a step back, and not a huge step back necessarily, but it's a step back in football. But in basketball, it's taken a huge leap forward. And I think that's something that the SEC was really focused on, was getting more competitive in basketball. And, man, it just worked out because they are loaded with top teams. And then it's just, you know, it stayed consistently dominant in baseball. Nothing's really changed there. But, yeah, the SEC, we knew it was going to be a gauntlet for LSU. We were hoping that they would pick up some wins kind of early on in the schedule, and they haven't yet. They're 0-3. They're playing another 0-3 team tonight in Arkansas. But if they don't pick up the win tonight against Arkansas in the PMAC, yes, the next 6 games are even tougher. So it's not going to be a good look.
We'll definitely be keeping an eye on this LSU basketball team tonight. You can hear that on 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. That is an 8 o'clock tip-off in the Maravich Center against Arkansas. And looking at the Tigers all-around baseball team, we're a month away from that starting. It's hard to believe that it's just 1 month out until LSU baseball takes the field. And I know we were talking about that last week with Mark Etheridge of SEC writer for D1Baseball.com. Looking forward to seeing what this Tiger team and Jay Johnson can provide this season, because I know obviously last year let down the Tigers not being able to punch their ticket to Omaha. And, you know, between the Saints and Pelicans action, we need something to rely on here, and hopefully Jay Johnson and the Tigers baseball team can deliver us.
We talked with Mark Etheridge last week about it, Steve, and he was just, I mean, we brought up that concern to him that the Saints and Pelican seasons have been disappointing, and we're hoping that LSU baseball can kind of give us a pick-me-up. And yeah, I mean, that's the expectation. D1 released their top 25 poll yesterday.
Saw that, yeah.
And LSU came in at number 3. Now, Perfect Game had him at number 2. D1 had a couple things shifted around. Both of them had Texas A&M as the preseason number one overall team. For obvious reasons, they brought back a ton from the team that made it to the national championship, you know, final this past season. So, you know, we'll see what happens. LSU baseball, I'm looking forward to it, Steve. 1 month out. Yeah, but we definitely we need a good team down here.
Speaking of good teams, that game last night, between the Rams and Vikings, man, oh, man, it sure made Minnesota look like a pretender despite being a 14-win squad.
14-2. Just think about this. And I revel in it because I'm not a fan of the Vikings at all.
No, right?
And their fans. 14-2, you know, their fan base is all excited. They're heading to Detroit with a one seed on the line. They could potentially get a first-round bye in the NFC postseason. They lay an egg in Detroit. And so now you have to play your first-round matchup in the wild card game on the road. Now, it ends up being a neutral site game against L.A. because of the California wildfires. They play it in Arizona, and
it didn't matter.
L.A.'s coaching staff looked at exactly what Detroit did to them in the week prior, and they did the exact same thing. We're sending heat after you. And when we were picking this game, there were a couple matchups that I was really concerned about for the Vikings, even despite them being a 14-win team and the Rams being a 10-win team, were the things that stood out to me. The Vikings' pass protection against the Lions was awful. It was leaky. And they were letting, you know, defenders get after Sam Darnold. And Darnold, when he gets pressured, it's kind of a mental thing, right? Like, we all remember the famous "I'm seeing ghosts" quote.
He saw plenty last night.
He saw plenty against Detroit, and he saw plenty last night against L.A. And even, like, the touchdown pass he threw to Hockenson was behind him. It was a bad throw. It was a great catch by Hockenson,
exactly,
who made a play.
Yeah.
When he got rattled, it was obvious he was not going to lead them to a victory in that game. So 9 sacks, which had tied the record for a playoff game. It's happened, like, I think 5 times in history. But they got after him early and often. And that neutralized the Vikings' offensive attack. They couldn't do anything. So there was that thing that kind of worried me, because the Rams' defensive line is young. It's talented. It's very, very good. But also the Rams' pass-catching weapons against the Vikings' secondary. And Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp really didn't do too much. He caught that big deep ball at one point. But Puka is such a weapon for the Rams. So they dominated the Vikings. And that was a 14-win Minnesota team. But they were just beat from the get-go. And so now, you know, you go home and a bunch of Vikings fans are questioning. It's like, what's the future with Sam Darnold here? I tend to agree with Mike. I think that he's going to be back for 2025. Not sure if it's going to be on the long-term contract. Maybe they decide to do it. And he may give him a slight discount because of how the last 2 weeks went. It's a sour taste to everyone's mouth up in Minnesota. But I think he's going to be their QB once again in 2025. I don't think there's a question about that.
Social media is such a funny thing. You mentioned after the game yesterday, well, going off the field, Justin Jefferson goes to the crowd and kind of gives the peace sign to everybody as he walks out. And now there's fans today on social media going, oh, is he saying goodbye to Minnesota? Is he going to demand a trade off the Vikings? And it's like, everyone, just relax a bit.
I mean... Justin Jefferson's probably why Sam Darnold's going to get an extension with the Vikings.
Right.
He loves having them throw to him. And Jets, you know, one of the best receivers in the NFL, was pretty quiet last night, Steve. I know that, once again, Darnold got pressured early and often, and he did not do anything in that game. But, you know, it wasn't a great performance by anyone on the Vikings, in all honesty.
Definitely looking forward to the matchups coming up in the divisional round of the playoffs. First up to bat, both teams that were on a bye, fair enough, they get to play the first slate of games on Saturday.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Lions and Commanders game, I'm really looking forward to, because Commanders are playing with house money at this point. Like, you're hoping that Dan Quinn's telling them that all week.
Right, we're not even supposed to be here
boys,
right now.
I mean, we're ahead of schedule. Right. We got a rookie quarterback that's gotten his first playoff victory in Tampa Bay. We're going on the road to Detroit. We're going to play the best team in the NFC in the Lions, a team that's been dominant all season, a team that's going to be off a week break. Like, no one's going to be picking us to win this game. Let's just go and have a good time. Have fun, right? Like, go out and see what happens. As I mentioned when we were talking with Mark Schlereth, anything from here on out for Washington and Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn is gravy.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it is gravy from here. Like, all their fans are so excited that they broke a 19-year drought of going without a playoff victory. I still can't believe that. That's incredible. They went 19 years without a playoff win, and they finally broke that streak. They have the hope that Jaden Daniels has brought that fan base. Dan Quinn has brought that fan base. And, I mean, once again, like, no one's expecting them to win. But at this point, like, their fans are still elated. They got to this point. They got to the divisional round. Congratulations. You won a playoff game in Jaden Daniels' rookie year. They were a 4-win team last year. And now they're at 13 wins.
We could sure use that kind of turnaround here.
Yeah, well, a good young quarterback and a good head coach does a lot for you.
Amazing, right? And the other matchup against the Kansas City Chiefs, it'll be the Houston Texans, another young quarterback, and C.J. Stroud, who had some struggles this year, but he still put up some decent numbers.
And they smoked the Chargers.
Man, oh man, I did not see that coming.
That was, you know, it's funny enough, I was joking with you about this, Steve. That was the one game that we all picked the same.
Of course.
Like, we all picked the Chargers.
Doomed from the start.
Well, I had more faith, really, in Harbaugh, you know, and everything. But, no, they got smoked. And Justin Herbert's catching a lot of flack. And I still think he's a good young quarterback. But, you know, that was a bad performance by the Chargers all around. So, now the Texans, similar situation here, except instead of a rookie quarterback, it's a second-year guy with CJ. But no one expects them to go into Kansas City and win. If you had to ask me right now, Steve, we'll do pick six later on in the week.
Right.
We'll make our selections. I've got a feeling it's going to kind of be like what it was last year, where the Texans shocked a lot of people, played great, and won the wild card game. Last year was against the Browns. This year it's against the Chargers. But last year they had to go to Baltimore, who was the top seed in the AFC, and they kind of got smoked. This year they have to go to Kansas City, top seed in the AFC. It's, you know, maybe a similar song and dance.
Shaping up for more of the same, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you would expect. We'll see. Maybe Houston can make it competitive this year. I would love to see a good performance by C.J. Stroud and the Texans in Kansas City. I mean, an upset victory is definitely a long shot. But, you know, I just want to see a good game, right?
Yeah, just wild to think, too, with this Kansas City Chiefs squad. You know, they got so much flack this season for not being the Chiefs we were used to seeing, and they still end up, you know, putting together a 15-win season and the number one seed in the AFC. Been there, done that, rinse, you know, lather, repeat with this team.
I think it's because they had a lot of fluky wins, and it wasn't a dominant 15-win team, like 15-2 season that you would typically expect. So that's why they've caught in some flack.
A less than exciting 15-win season or dominating 15-win season. It's wild to think about with KC and what makes them even scarier come playoff time.
Yeah, man. But at the same time, you know, they're the top dog, and you got to beat the man to be the man, so to speak. And the two squads opposite of that game in the AFC, Buffalo versus Baltimore, matching up in the other divisional round with the opportunity to play likely Kansas City in the AFC Championship game. I mean, it's all about, you know, the narratives. Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen, right? Like, I can't wait for this matchup. But both run games under Todd Monken, the OC for Baltimore, and then Joe Brady, the OC for Buffalo, have really started to get going. And I brought this up when we were just talking with Schlereth in the last hour, that if you look at the amount of rushing attempts both teams had in their wild card victories, Bills had 44 rushing attempts, 210 yards in their win over the Broncos. The Ravens had 50 rushing attempts, 299 rushing yards in their win over the Steelers. So two teams that want to run the football, two outstanding quarterbacks that are both dual threats with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, and two quarterbacks that haven't gotten to the Super Bowl yet, but both have great teams this year. And both are vying for that first ever Super Bowl appearance, and they're going to have to beat each other before they get a shot at Pat Mahomes. I hate that. You know, like, I wish that it was, you know, the Bills versus like the Texans, and then the Ravens had to go to Kansas City or something like that. You know what I mean? But either way, I mean, I'd be rooting for either one of Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen to make it to the Super Bowl. So I'm really excited to see how this game goes. It's going to be the premier matchup of the weekend.
Yeah, and then the other matchup being the Eagles and the Rams. We talked about the Rams a little bit going, you know, last night in their matchup. And, man, oh, man, the Eagles, could there be a less impressive win in the postseason that they were able to pull out against Green Bay, and they were still kind of able to dominate them in unimpressive fashion?
To say Green Bay limped out of Philadelphia would be an understatement. They got banged up. Like, they were a walking mash unit by the end of that game. They had so many injuries that they suffered to the wide receiver position, to the offensive line. They got destroyed in that matchup. So, Philadelphia, you know,
their O-line and D-line definitely stand out as a huge strength for them.
I think they're 13-1 since their week 6 bye, or week 5 bye, or something like that. So, they've been on a roll. And yes, the trenches, that was the one spot. The reason I picked the Packers to cover, I didn't think they were going to win. I thought it would be like a field goal type of game. I didn't do very well in pick six, by the way. Like, I made it up with the final two games, but the rest of the weekend did not go very well. The reason I thought the Packers could keep it close was because when you look at the trenches, Green Bay felt like one of the teams that could play with Philadelphia, offensive and defensive lines. Philly's just too dominant. And so that's kind of the question mark when you get into this matchup for LA. It's like, can they control the trenches against that excellent Philadelphia Eagles defensive and offensive lines? And I'm not really sure.
That's what's sad about the woulda, coulda, what could have been with this Saints team. They lost the game against the Eagles this year, but man, that came right down to the wire in that matchup, and they couldn't close the deal. But they had Philly for most of that game. And you look at this Saints squad, so it gives you some kind of maybe hope for going into next year. I don't know, because there are some building blocks with this team. It's not all horrid as most fans would want to think, but there was some, you know, bright spots to this Saints squad early in the year. It just sadly really went downhill, and I hate to pull out on the injuries, but you know, that was a major issue for this team.
The Eagles also kind of smoked themselves in that game, like all the turnovers that they had and all the poor play. No AJ Brown either. Like, I don't know, man. The Eagles are a house, and I'm looking forward to it because I think you're probably going to see that Detroit versus Philly NFC Championship game. I mean, that's obviously the two favorites that everyone was kind of expecting for weeks at this point.
And it seems like it'd be a big physical matchup, you know, with those two.
That feels like the trenches warfare that you're looking forward to seeing in NFL playoff football.
We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. Want to hear from you, 504-260-1870. When we get back from the break, talk to Jake Madison of the Locked On Pels podcast as the Birds get the Chicago Bulls in Chi-Town tonight. We're gearing up for that. A 7 o'clock tip-off you can hear on 870 AM, but we'll be back with more of Sports Talk, so stay tuned right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on 105.3 FM over on 870 AM, you can get Pelicans pregame coverage of their matchup in Chicago. To help us break that down here, Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast, thanks so much for the time. Jake, how you been doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on to talk some hoops here.
Definitely always appreciate your time. Just curious, you know, we're going to get right into some of the dilemma you have to deal with Zion Williamson recently getting suspended after, unfortunately, you know, violation of team rules. We find out being late for the team plane. Obviously not a good look for Zion. The team had to respond in some kind of way. And I think everyone's biggest concern or, you know, gripe right now is how committed is he to this team, and how committed is he even to himself as being a professional basketball player?
Look, that's the big question around this team right now. You know, we can talk about this game against the Chicago Bulls, but when you have 8 wins and your focus shifts to next season, which is what the focus is on, it's who are you building around? And we've seen how bad this team is without Zion. We've seen them look entirely different when Zion has played. But then you have this suspension come out that's not just for being late for the team playing, but it sounds like it was multiple instances of being late to practice, missing certain things, and it just raises question about that commitment. So while there's no denying Zion Williamson's talent and the impact he has on a basketball court, you also need someone who is a professional that's going to live up to the expectations that, you know, he has, which are pretty high. And if you're a franchise that's trying to build for the future and put a consistent winner on the court here in New Orleans, Can you do it around Zion Williamson? You know, when he plays, you can win games, certainly, but we've seen that he misses a lot of time due to injuries. And now this brings up other questions again of, is that lack of professionalism translating to those injuries? Does that mean he takes longer to come back from injuries? And can you just build around that kind of guy? Is he actually a franchise cornerstone? And I think that's up in the air right now. You know, I will say that them suspending him, likely fining him too when it comes to that, to me, kind of signals they're still trying to build around him. That's not something, that's not a move that's going to increase his trade value whatsoever. And if you were trying to trade him or move on from him, maybe it's because of the lack of professionalism. You likely don't want this being public because that's only going to lower the trade value that you'd get in return for him. So this to me signals, okay, we've got to try and do something to kind of get him on the right kind of path. And maybe finding him, maybe suspending him is really the way to go about it. But it does just make you wonder, will it ever click? Are they ever going to be able to build a winner around him? And I think that's the big question right now.
Yeah, the big question for me, too, is, you know, is it really Zion trying to force his way out of New Orleans? You hear the rumors swirling around that. And to me, it doesn't make any sense. If you're not on the court, you're not helping your trade value any. And obviously, the Pelicans, they would be looking to get back as much as you can in return for a superior talent like that. But I don't think they have intentions of moving on from Zion. Really haven't felt that kind of vibe from him here as well. But it's just, man, I can't, it's so disappointing to just, you couple that with the injuries and now just of his lack of commitment to being a pro, just all around, not a good look here. And I don't know how the Pels or Zion dig themselves out of this.
You know, there's nothing you can do this season. You know, at this point, the year is gone. They're not making the playoffs. The focus needs to be on next year and doing everything you can to try and maximize that. And that's probably going to involve playing Zion Williamson. So there's the losses seem like they're going to continue to mount up to some degree here. You know, I think the biggest thing to me, and the biggest concern with Zion Williamson in this suspension and the lack of professionalism is, look, he knows his value has fallen. No one is saying good things about Zion Williamson and hasn't been saying good things about Zion Williamson at all this season as he dealt with that hamstring injury. And luckily he's come back from it. It's not season ending, which we've seen before, but that's when you just need to be on your best behavior. The fan base seems to be out on Zion Williamson. You know, there are clauses in his contract where they could cut him and not pay him any more money and things like that. So if you know you've got to be on your best behavior and you still aren't, what does that say?
Yeah.
And to me, that's a pretty strong statement that he's making even indirectly. Now, I don't think it's that he's trying to force his way out. Look, there's a different playbook for that. You kind of follow what Anthony Davis did here in New Orleans. You can do what Jimmy Butler is doing now. You can just simply request a trade and they'll likely try and move you, right? You want people that buy into your situation, to your franchise, to your program. And if someone's not willing to do that, ship them out the door. There's been no indication of that. This is just him being not professional. You know, he's young, right? He's still young. You know, he's got tons of money. Would we be doing anything differently? I can't say that I would be necessarily if I were in his situation. But also when you're an NBA player, there's just standards that you have to live up to. And he's certainly failing in that regard right now. I think it's just a lack of maturity from somebody and not necessarily something nefarious about trying to force his way out. Because as you said, you're not going to make it easier on yourself by not playing and by doing these sorts of things.
So the questions are there, Jake, about Zion Williamson and if he's a real core piece of this future team. But I think there's no questions about what we've seen from Trey Murphy and how the Pelicans really have something here. I want to give you some of the numbers. The lead had put this out. Over his last 10 games, Trey averaging 25.2 points per game, 4.9 rebounds per game. The shooting splits are fantastic, 49% from the field, 42% from three, 95% from the free throw line, 65% true shooting percentage. Trey Murphy is starting to blossom in his fourth year in New Orleans. And really, the opportunity has been there. Obviously, Brandon Ingram's been out with an injury for weeks at this point. And so he's getting his chance to start. And I know that he had missed some time with the ankle injury. But coming back in the performance that he put on Sunday in TD Garden, leading the team with 30 points, 10-17 shooting, 5 threes in that game. Trey Murphy, I can't say enough good things about him, because as much of the drama that's surrounding Zion Williamson and potentially his future and maybe some of these pieces that the Pelicans could trade off, Trey Murphy is a core building block of this roster. He's going to be here for a long time.
Yeah, they view him as a core piece. You know, there's a reason they gave him that big money extension that's going to pay him about $25 million per year. This is someone they believe in and think can be a starter and a pretty high-level starter in the NBA, and you're seeing it with his production right now. You've seen growth from him in his game. We know of him as a three-point shooter. We know he has really good size, but you're seeing more creation and, you know, creating his own shot off of the dribble than we've ever seen before, and that's a really key piece if you're going to be a top one or two guy on a team, and you're seeing that type of production from him right now. His handle is a little bit tighter. You're seeing a variety of moves to help him get to the rim. You've also seen him put on a lot of strength. You can see he has more muscle on his body. He's finishing through contact and at the rim better than he ever has been before. And this is a player that's making someone like Brandon Ingram expendable. They realized he could do this. There's a reason they've been looking to move on from Brandon Ingram, but there's no talks of an extension with Brandon Ingram, because you're getting this type of production from Trey Murphy, and this is the guy that the team really believed in. You know, they drafted him, they knew what he was capable of, and you're seeing it really pay off right now. And even in a lost season for New Orleans, these reps that he's getting right now are going to be really valuable for him in the future. And if they were being competitive, pushing for the playoffs, you might not be seeing him take this kind of role and get some of the production, but this is really important for his growth and development. And this is a guy that is at least, you know, is arguably more of a core piece going forward than Zion Williamson is.
I would agree 1,000%. I think Trey Murphy and the work that he's put in this offseason, Jake, to all the points that you mentioned with his offensive game. Also, Willie Green gave him credit about his improvement on defense as well. Trey Murphy, it's nice to see the professionalism and someone that's willing to put work into their craft. Now, you know, one of the surprises, and he's been a surprise basically for the first 40 games of the season, pleasantly so, Eve Missy, the December Rookie of the Month. His production hasn't really been there too heavily early on in January, but I think still, we talked with Mark Spears about this on Friday, Jake, and he was saying that Eve is still one of the bright spots on this team, that you found, you know, your center of the future in, you know, a weaker draft class with the 21st overall pick. That's a major props to what the Pelicans front office was able to do.
Look, that was the guy that they wanted, that they believed in. And I was really skeptical of that draft pick when they made it. I thought there were other guys they really could go after, but that's speaking to the Pelicans process in their front office for all the criticism of them. They're getting it right when it comes to the draft, and Eve Missy looks like he'll be entrenched as a starter going forward. He's hitting a bit of a rookie wall right now, but I think this is a really important time because he can play without pressure, without really big expectations on him. The whole team can, and it allows them to experiment and try different lineups, and you're going to see Eve Missy out there alongside Zion Williamson, and I think that's a really important thing. Figure out if those two guys really work together and if that's kind of your front court of the future or if you need to pivot. But Missy's done a really good job of manning that position, going up against some really impressive big men in the league and holding his own. Even if the scoring's not going to be elite, you don't need it from him. You need him to block shots. You need him to rebound. You need him to do those sorts of things, and you're seeing it from him. I'm excited to see him and Zion work in the pick and roll a little bit more and see what can develop there.
Looking at tonight's game against the Chicago Bulls, Jake, what can we expect from Chicago? I know we haven't seen this club since the beginning of the season for the Pels.
Yeah, look, it comes down to Zach LaVine. This is a guy that's rumored to be on the trade block. I talked about him coming potentially to New Orleans on Locked On Pelicans today, but you've got to slow him down. This is someone who's averaging almost 25 points per game this season. He's shooting the three ball incredibly well, near 50% on high volume. You've got to take him out of the game. If you do that, this team is very beatable, I think, because he kind of is their engine that makes everything work, opens up the game for other guys. But keep an eye on someone like Nikola Vucevic, who's had a really good resurgence season for this team too. You're going to need Eve Missy to defend out there on the perimeter. Not something that he's great at, but this is really a good game for him to show off his athleticism, the switchability that you want to see from him. And I think that's the key to shutting down this Chicago Bulls team.
And then the back-to-back as well, Jake, looking ahead to the Mavericks. Obviously, no Luka Doncic. It sounds like Kyrie Irving could potentially be making his return tonight after being out since, I think, New Year's Day. But a back-to-back, you're not exactly sure if he's going to be playing in that matchup. But what do you kind of see from the Mavericks and, you know, their 22-17 start?
You know, one of the things with them you've got to keep an eye on is the big man position. Derek Lively, the second, you know, their rookie revelation last year as a second-year player, he's kind of key. When he gets good minutes and good production, they tend to win games. So, again, it comes down to maybe Eve Misi and the defense on somebody like that, taking away the lob threat, not getting those easy points and pick and rolls for the opponent. Without Luka Doncic, they become a little bit easier to defend, I think, and trying to take away those threats. You know, Lively can get up and throw it down on a lob or an alley-oop. You've got to try and eliminate that and at least make them work for their points harder on Wednesday.
Jake, always appreciate your time, and let's hope we get one back in the win column tonight. Thanks again, Jake.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, y'all.
For all things Pelicans, subscribe to the Locked On Pelicans podcast on the Odyssey app, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll hear some of Willie Green's pregame comments as the Birds get ready to take on Da Bolso. Coming right back with Sports Talk right after this. Getting ready for Pelicans basketball, tipping off 7 o'clock, 8:70 a.m. at Chicago. In the Pel's starting lineup for this evening, DeJounte Murray, C.J. McCollum, Trey Murphy, Zion Williamson, and Eve Misi. We're going to hear from now head coach Willie Green before the Birds get ready to take on the Bulls.
DJ has had two of his better games of the season in the games that Zion has been out there. What have you seen in those two that has kind of allowed him to find his rhythm a little bit more?
I think the balance attack with Zion taking some of the ball handling responsibilities, the gravity that he brings while he's on the floor, and he's such a willing passer that all of our guys are able to get into an easy rhythm shot with his ability to drive the ball, kick it to them, and you know, he makes the game easier. And that's just the nature of having extremely high talented players on the floor.
It's probably gonna be a lot of nights for right now where you're gonna miss Herb Jones, but maybe tonight is definitely one of them against, you know, a guy who's scored 30 and 6 straight in the way that Zach is playing. What have you kind of seen from Levine in these, you know, kind of since the start of the year?
He's playing fast, playing with confidence. He has an altered green light to, you know, shoot whenever he feels, you know, that it's a quality shot for him, and he's attacking in transition, pull up threes, getting to the basket. He's when he's playing with this type of confidence, you know, it makes their team dangerous.
You played a team very similar in style, but at Boston, as far as the attempts, threes made, and I know you had an issue that night with rebounding a lot of those misses and the second chance points for the Celtics. Is there a key as far as trying to box out and getting those long rebounds on those misses?
That's definitely one of our keys, and it's been a key all season. It's just, you know, we have to step on the floor with that mindset that teams that shoot a lot of threes, it's going to be long shots, long rebounds, and you know, it would make our defense that much better if we were able to get stops the first time and then finish those possessions. So it's a major key for us going into any game, and especially tonight.
As you're getting healthier too, it just appears that the offense is where you really thought it was going to be when we came out of training camp, as far as getting the threes up and the makes. And is that coinciding with the health of your team?
It is. It is. You know, the healthier we get, the more continuity we'll have as a group, and we can have continuously the same guys playing together. And we haven't had that for a major part of the season. That helps the offense get into a rhythm.
Looking for that rhythm tonight. Pelicans taking on the Bulls coming up 7 o'clock tip-off over on 8:70 a.m. Seeing here that the Chicago squad is allowing the second most points to opposing shooting guards this season. Hopefully we can see C.J. McCollum maybe go off against them.
Yeah, let C.J. cook. The issue is that Zach LaVine's going to cook right back. I mean, Andrew Lopez brought it up in that presser. The amount of points this guy's putting up is kind of crazy. In the last six games, starting from the new year, so basically every game that they played in 2025, 32 points on 12 of 20 shooting, 33 points on 13 of 21 shooting, 35 points on 13 of 25 shooting, 31 points on 12 of 20 shooting, 33 points on 14 of 21, and 36 points on 12 of 24. So you kind of know what you're going to get with Zach LaVine. You're going to get a lot of volume, a lot of three-point shooting as well. The attempts there, 8, 6, 6, 6, 7, and 8. And then also the field goal attempts were up too. So once again, the volume, but the scoring volume's up as well. So as Coach Green mentioned, he's playing fast. He's a dangerous shooting guard. Someone that, you know, the Pelicans are definitely going to miss Herb Jones in this matchup tonight.
Chicago, a 18-21 record. The Pels, 8-32. Chicago goes into this matchup surprisingly just a 1.5-point favorite for this matchup. 7 o'clock tip-off over on 870 AM. We are taking a break here on Sports Talk and be back with more as we close out the 6 o'clock hour on WWL right after this. Back here on Sports Talk, do you listen to WWL on the Odyssey app? If not, you gotta join the club. We've seen big growth in listeners in our area who stream their favorite shows on their phones and who download our daily show podcast. Now more than ever, you can stay connected to WWL for breaking news, sports, and opinions you just don't get anywhere else. Download the Odyssey app today and make sure you go to My Audio, then into your settings and turn on notifications. That way you'll never miss a big story or a red-hot interview. WWL always live on the free Odyssey app. Coming back from the break, Charlie, I know you whispered in my ear some interesting numbers on some SEC statistics coming to basketball.
So going back and circling back around to what we were talking about at the very start of the hour, Steve, I had mentioned that the SEC is awesome in college hoops this year, and that's the case. 4 of the top 6 teams in the country from the SEC, 5 of the top 8, and then 9 of the top 23 in the latest AP Top 25 poll. That is Auburn at number 1.
Sounding like baseball numbers.
Alabama at number 4, Florida at 5, Tennessee at 6, Kentucky at 8. A little bit further down the ranking, Texas A&M at 11, Mississippi State at 15. Then a little bit even further down that, Ole Miss at 21 and Georgia at 23. So SEC is a gauntlet in college hoops this year. And, you know, once we get down to March Madness, which a couple months away, looking forward to it. Yeah, I think that I'm going to be picking some SEC teams going pretty deep.
Taking a break for the top of the hour news. When we get back, get into some Saints talk here from GM and Executive Vice President Mickey Loomis. Also, Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak will join us right here on WWL after the break. Stay tuned.